things will be authorized. But if you don't have the funding component on the other end, we really haven't done much other than put it onto paper.
Senator Lisa Murkowski takes on an influential new committee post. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 21st of January. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans reflect on their time in the spotlight during yesterday's inauguration.
We got to wave at him and eye-to-eye contact, and which was totally awesome. We loved it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Inlet Tower Hotel and Suites, offering banquets and catering services from private dining to business conferences to wedding banquets. Information on hotel amenities online at inlettower.com.
Senator Lisa Murkowski has secured a seat on the powerful Senate Appropriations Committee. Her office announced the appointment today. In order to take the slot on appropriations, she's giving up membership on the Foreign Relations Committee, but she'll retain her spot on as the ranking Republican on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, and she'll stay on the Indian Affairs Committee and Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Murkowski says she pursued being on appropriations in part to push for funding projects that can benefit Alaska, from basic infrastructure like roads to hospitals.
Our needs are very real. They're very tangible. And the best way to ensure that Alaskans' voices are heard when it comes to the funding side is to secure a seat on the Appropriations Committee.
Senator Murkowski's addition to the Appropriations Committee fills a void left when former Senator Ted Stevens lost his bid for re-election in November, and prior to that lost his power as ranking member on committees after he was indicted on felony charges in July. Stevens served as chairman on the Appropriations Committee for most of 1997 to 2005. From that seat, he was able to bring billions of federal dollars back to Alaska. However, since then, the culture of earmarks has changed. Murkowski says earmarks may not flow so freely now, but she says the change is largely positive.
The process is, as far as specific earmarks to a state, is now far more open and transparent. Not to suggest that earmarks will not be part of the process anymore. I think we recognize that they will continue. But we are seeing a marked decrease in those targeted projects specific to states.
Murkowski says she believes the case can be made for funding specific projects, especially through agencies, as long as the process is open. The senator says she hopes her position on appropriations will complement her other committees, particularly her senior seat on the Energy Committee. About 250 Alaskans gathered in Washington, D.C. this morning for a constituent coffee with their senators. The event, co-hosted by Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski and Democratic Senator Mark Begich, welcomed Alaskans visiting Washington for this week's inauguration celebration. As APRN's Libby Casey reports, the guests have a lot of hopes for the new president and their senators.
The large room in the Senate's Hart Building buzzed with enthusiasm about Tuesday's inauguration. Alaskans shared their stories of trying to watch the swearing-in and what witnessing history meant to them. And they were also talking about what happens next, both for President Barack Obama and for Alaska's congressional delegation. Many are thinking about what they want to see out of Washington in the coming months and years. Environmental activist Sean McGuire of Fairbanks says he wants a serious effort dedicated to transforming America's energy supply.
One thing that, you know, I'm hoping is there can be kind of a Manhattan Project on energy. We've got to get away from coal. And, you know, it's a win-win on virtually every level. So let's get wind and solar and hydro. And it's almost like you feel like it's do or die.
McGuire isn't alone in wanting to see a major transformation of Alaska's and the country's energy plans. The owner of Chena Hot Springs Resort outside Fairbanks, Bernie Carl, sees this as a time of unique possibility. He says despite the flagging economy, he thinks the country can take the lead on energy innovation.
There's more opportunity now than there's ever been in the history of man. And you say, why? Well, because this is the horn of plenty, but we got to reinvent ourselves. And that's what this stimulus package is all about, is about reinventing America. There's opportunities everywhere. They're endless for a smokestack-free economy, for electric cars, for hydrogen, for growing food. It's endless to where we can go if you have an imagination.
Carl is encouraging Alaska senators to support President Obama's stimulus package. As the owner of an innovative geothermal power plant at Chena Hot Springs, he wants to see other communities develop alternative energy programs. He sees Alaska's senators as allies in advancing green power and is eager to see Lisa Murkowski take the lead in her new role of senior senator.
She is taking Mark, and they are going to be two horses that are teamed up pulling the same direction. That doesn't mean they're always going to go to the same trough and feed, but it does mean that they're willing to work together.
Valerie Davidson of Anchorage wants the policymakers to understand that high energy costs are having ripple effects in rural Alaska. She's originally from Bethel and works for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
The energy issue is more than just a matter of families' personal finances. It really has a public health impact, and we're expecting a public health crisis. And so recently, with a letter that came out from Imangak, we're starting to see, okay, here's what's happening, and people need to be prepared.
Davidson says she's had positive feedback from both senators, and she's looking to the new president, too.
With the Obama administration, one of the things that we are really feeling lucky about at ANTHC is that, one, he knows about tribes, he has relationship with tribes, and he is very, very interested in health. And in Alaska and across the country, tribal health programs and the Indian health system is funded at only about 50% of the level of need.
Young people like 19-year-old Tony Glavinick turned out at Wednesday's constituent coffee for the chance to mingle with other Alaskans and speak with the senators. Glavinick grew up in Anchorage, but is going to college in Washington. He's worked with Murkowski's office on safer schools legislation and hopes to now work with the newest senator, too. He also has hopes for President Obama.
I think under this administration, we can also hope to see a lot of advancements in civil rights, especially for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And I know that's one thing I'm going to be working on very hard over the next 4 years. As for the Alaska delegation, I'm just really excited that Mark Begich is in office, and I think we can look forward to a lot of positive things for Alaska and for the country.
Many of the Alaskans gathered in Washington this week say they're invigorated by the changes President Obama promises, and the largely Democratic-leaning crowd says they believe Alaska's delegation can play a role. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Alaskans who had a unique vantage point at yesterday's inaugural ceremonies in Washington, D.C. are reflecting on their experiences. Two groups represented Alaska in the inaugural parade. More than 20 people came from Barrow with the Siri Manachuat dance group. They were the only Alaska Native group in the parade and rode a float down the route, eventually making their way to the stands where President Barack Obama, First Lady Michelle, and Vice President Joe Biden watched with others. Member Robert Ockpick Jr. says it was an amazing experience.
We saw the president face to face, about maybe 10 feet away. We got to wave at him and eye to eye contact, and which was totally awesome. We loved it.
Ockpick had the honor of dancing before the new president. He performed to a song written by his grandfather just for the occasion, called Obama. Ockpick says it expresses gratitude to the new president. While thousands of people crammed together to watch the parade go through Washington yesterday, millions watched it on television. Ockpick says friends and family in Barrow saw them perform from thousands of miles away.
Our people from Bear called us on our cell phones and told us how amazing it was to see us on national television, to be in front of the newly elected president of the United States of America.
In addition to the Barrow dancers, a marching band came from Colony High School in Palmer. 19-year-old senior Joy Milkey says they got up long before dawn to catch a bus to the staging area and then spent hours in the cold waiting for the parade to start. But Milkey says it was definitely worth it.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. Like, my heart was throbbing, just like, we're going to go by the president. And I didn't really see him, but I knew he was there. He was waving to us, he was looking at us, and that our band, we played our best. We put our whole heart into it because we knew we worked so hard to get here.
The Colony High School Marching Band played Traveling Band by Creedence Clearwater Revival. Milky plays the flute, but says she was impressed by some of the girls in the band who play bigger instruments like the tuba and had to carry them throughout the whole day. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a protest in Homer over the revived Healy Coal Power Plant.
Dirty coal will cost us far more money than pursuing sound renewable resources.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
State lawmakers don't plan to pursue abuse of power findings against Governor Sarah Palin, but they do want to know why their subpoenas were ignored in last fall's Troopergate investigation. Some are annoyed that possible witnesses snubbed a September legislative hearing into Palin's firing of her public safety director, Walt Monaghan. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jay Ramirez, a Republican from Fairbanks, wants to know more about Attorney General Talis Kohlberg's role in their failure to show. Ramirez could hold hearings as early as next week. The 14 people, who included some of Palin's top aides, did ultimately testify or provide written statements. The legislature is beginning to establish its priorities for the session, with the revenue cash flow problem topping the list of issues that will put everything else in perspective. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Revenue is the major factor in what issues will be dealt with this year. Renewable energy projects have to be paid for. So do increased health care costs, advances in education, and infrastructure improvements. With the budget before members based on higher oil prices than the state now sees, creating an income deficit of some $2 to $3 billion, the rest of the budget would have to come from reserves. Bringing things into line could strain some legislative relationships. House Finance Co-Chair Mike Hawker says lawmakers find themselves in a new world.
With current oil prices and reasonable oil price forecasts, we are looking at potentially a multi-billion dollar deficit.
Hawker remembers when budgets were based on oil prices in the $8 range. But the newer members don't, and he says they've never had to worry about money.
I think that's going to result in a real changing dynamic of the discussion again. It's going to be a real refocusing on the structural problems we've got with our state's financial situation, our dependency upon one resource, and the volatility.
Calling it a roller coaster environment, Bethel Democrat Lyman Hoffman, co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, says the legislature did not spend every dollar the state's made for the last 2 years, so that money would be available in times like these. The Senate Republican minority does not have any representation on the Finance Committee, and Fairbanks' Gene Terrio says it'll be difficult for the Senate to make any meaningful adjustments to the budget without anyone to question the spending plans. He's calling for a cautious approach.
That behooves the majorities to set some kind of a target, get an agreement between the executive, the House, and the Senate on where they generally want to bring spending in. Without it, then it devolves into a free-for-all between the two bodies, between individual members, and that just pushes spending up.
House Democrats just want to see a plan. Anchorage Representative Max Gruenberg says under existing statutes, the governor is required to give an annual report on estimated revenue and future expenses for the next 10 years. But he says there's no foresight from the legislature. Members of both caucuses in both the House and Senate are looking for the governor's approach to the revenue question. Finance leaders say they're anticipating changes to a budget she introduced back in December. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
A crowd of about 50 rallied outside the Homer Electric Association building today to protest the utility's involvement in the proposed restart of the Healy Clean Coal Plant. KBBI's Casey Kelly has more.
No coal! No secrets! No coal! No secrets!
Under an agreement announced last week, the state-owned Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority would sell the Healy Clean Coal Plant to the Fairbanks utility Golden Valley Electric Association. Starting in 2014, HEA would have the right to buy up to 50% of the power produced at the plant, but would also share in the financial risks of running it. Mike O'Mara is the spokesman for the HEA Members Forum, an ad hoc group that opposes the deal. He says the plant never really lived up to its promise of clean coal technology, and HEA is taking a big risk by getting involved with it now.
We demand, I think all of us demand, that before this business goes any further, a public forum is established where HEA board and management can explain specifically what information they have that justifies making a decision to become involved with a failed coal facility.
Besides the fact that the plant never really ran as advertised, O'Mara says it's unlikely that even if it could be brought online, that it would meet anticipated guidelines for greenhouse gas and mercury emissions under the new administration of President Barack Obama. He says HEA should look to renewable sources of energy instead.
Dirty coal will mess up our state. Dirty coal will cost us far more money than pursuing sound renewable resources.
All these concerns take a backseat to O'Mara's main complaint that officials with HEA, Golden Valley Electric, and ADA have thus far discussed much of the proposed deal behind closed doors in executive sessions.
We need a board and an administration that operates in a transparent manner, that welcomes, that actually seeks member input.
HEA spokesman Joe Gallagher says there's been no attempt to hide the negotiations from members. In fact, HEA has publicly acknowledged its interest in the Healy project since 2004, when the utility first responded to the state's request for proposals to restart the plant. Gallagher says if anything has been discussed in executive session, it's because the deal is still tentative and there's certain information that cannot be discussed publicly.
This has been an ongoing issue for what is now several years, and the board has heard often from folks who are concerned about this, and that's good. The membership's been participating at the board level on a very regular basis and making their thoughts about this known to the board in no uncertain terms.
Gallagher says a private engineering study shows that the Healy plant could be restarted to produce clean, low-cost energy with just some minor modifications to the existing technology. He says HEA's involvement in the project doesn't mean the utility won't also pursue renewable energy projects, such as hydroelectric and wind power sources.
Really, if we're able to secure some power from Healy, along with some natural gas power, that actually will allow us and give us more flexibility to incorporate these renewable projects into the energy picture. So really, the picture or the key that we're trying to reach here is diversified power, to have several different sources that we can pull from.
No coal, no secret!
But back at the protest in Homer, O'Mara remains unconvinced. The HEA Board of Directors will hold a special meeting Thursday night to discuss the Healy issue, and O'Mara says he hopes it will be done so in the open.
I think it would be a nice gesture for them to open the meeting.
Asked what he hopes will happen at the meeting, O'Mara says he'd like the board to reconsider the vote from last week, entering HEA into the Healy agreement. In Homer, I'm Casey Keller.
Perpetrators of fraud are getting more creative in their attempts to trick people into revealing their Social Security and other personal numbers. Alaska State Troopers are warning citizens about a new scam targeting the public, jury duty summons. Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says callers tell their intended identity theft victims that they failed to show up for jury duty and a warrant has been issued for their arrest. When the unwitting person states they haven't received any notice of jury duty, the caller starts intimidation tactics.
The scammer, claiming to be with the court system, begins bullying the person into getting the personal information from them to verify their files. Don't comply. It's a scam. Ask questions of your own. Ask them who they are. Get their office number. Get whose office they work out of. And then independently research that office to see if it exists, to see if that number exists. If there is a problem, hang up and contact your own court system because they're the real people. You should be contacting them instead of vice versa.
Peter says the main thing to remember is never give out your Social Security number to callers you're not expecting.
people should not be soliciting that from you. If you're going to be giving out your social security number and your personal information, it should be because you have gone someplace and you are seeking services and you know that you're going to this person and you're going to get this from them. And one of the requirements is to give out your social security number. People should not be randomly calling you and trying to get you to tell them it.
Peter says people outside of Alaska have been victimized in the jury duty scam, but it's not clear if any Alaskans have been. She says if you have, don't be ashamed or embarrassed and shy away from reporting the crime. She says law enforcement can't investigate or work on the problem if they aren't notified. And she says if your personal information is compromised, it can be very difficult and expensive to rectify.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Rasmussen Foundation is announcing March 1st as the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Awards grant, which provides funding directly to artists to support their creative work. You can sign up to participate in one of the Rasmussen information sessions to be held the week of January 19th by calling 297-2876 or go online at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
The Army plans to test fire missiles in Alaska. The Fort Greely-based Cold Regions Test Center will launch several missiles between January 24th and February 20th, south of Delta Junction. The 6-inch diameter, 6-foot-long missiles will not contain warheads. The Army is releasing no other details about the new weapons, and the test center's John Vigito says it's closing off public access to the massive training area.
It's all the Donnelly Training Area West that's going to be closed. Essentially, it's all the military land west of the Delta River, so it's a fair amount of real estate going all the way from north to south. We're going to have roadblocks in the area during testing at all the major trail access points around the surface danger zone, and should be rather obvious.
The Army estimates 7 in a million odds that a missile will stray outside the training zone, but the public is advised to also avoid lands along the Little Delta River beyond the military training area. Other precautions being taken include Federal Aviation Administration notices to airmen, public service announcements, helicopter overflights of the potential impact area, and continuous radar monitoring. Vigato says the tests are being conducted in a very remote area, and the public should not be able to hear or see the missile.
I highly doubt it. You might see some lights or flashes as operations are going on.
Vigato says the Alaska launches are part of a broader program aimed at testing the missiles in a range of climate zones. The Department of Natural Resources plans to again use the winter month to clear fire breaks aimed at protecting Fairbanks from catastrophic wildfire. Fairbanks Area Fire Management Officer Robert Schmall says one area being targeted was identified as a risk during the massive boundary fire in 2004. Schmall says the firebreak project off Old Murphy Dome Road has been in the works for 3 years.
We've got about 80% of it done, and essentially what we're doing with that is putting in a 300-foot wide fuel break between Murphy Dome and the Elliott Highway.
The final section of the fire break is about 5 miles long and has good road access. Schmall says the cleared trees will be made available for harvest as firewood.
There's not a whole lot of firewood because they're primarily shear-blading black spruce. And areas where there's hardwoods, we're actually leaving that in place because that's, you know, for the most part, a natural fire break.
The fire break clearing is planned for March. The Alaska State Library Historical Collections has released rare video footage of a speech by U.S. Senator Edward Ted Kennedy, delivered to the Alaska Democratic Party Convention in Sitka on April 7, 1968, just 3 days after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. KCAW's Bonnie Sue Hitchcock has more.
Bobby Kennedy had been scheduled to deliver the keynote address at the 1968 Democratic Convention in Sitka, but because of riots taking place around the country following the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., Ted Kennedy delivered the speech in his brother's place.
Except that they say he was a disappointment because we had wanted Bobby Kennedy. And Teddy was just considered kind of a no-count younger brother.
Sitka resident Elizabeth Annis was a delegate working on the Democratic precinct in 1968. She says hearing the speech again 40 years later has given her a new perspective.
I was kind of more enjoying the convention than paying much attention to what he actually said. So it wasn't until I heard him on this tape this weekend that I realized how very pertinent his speech was to the situation we're in today.
There is a time to talk to Democrats and a time to talk to all men regardless of party. There is a time to recount our past and recall those in our party who have built a nation. And there are times to focus on the present, to assure a future more secure.
Jim Simard, head of the historical collections at the Alaska State Library, says this video footage isn't a recent find, but it's recently been reformatted so that it can now be accessed. And that's what makes it so exciting.
Open Reel video has been in our collection for a long time, but it's been in an inaccessible format, an older format that was shot in 1968. So we've had the material transferred through a contractor that does conservation on archival media.
That one-inch Open Reel videotape was labeled only Ted Kennedy Sitka. Simard says there was no reference to the convention and no information about who might have created the film.
We're hoping with the footage being online that we'll be able to find out who it was that shot the video.
Introducing Kennedy as Alaska Senator at the time, Ernest Greening, who is introduced by Democratic Chairman Eugene Guess. For being 40 years old, Simard says the tape is in amazingly good condition.
The State Library is in the beginning stages of an effort to digitize a large portion of our audiovisual collections. And this is one of the early documents that we're trying to make more available to the public.
The timing of the video's release on the Digital Archives website is also poignant, not only because the speech was made in Sitka the Sunday immediately after Dr. King's assassination, but also because of the recent hospitalization of the now 76-year-old senator. He collapsed during the inaugural luncheon Tuesday, but doctors have said his collapse was caused by simple fatigue. The senator is also battling a brain tumor.
We will be one again. We will be strong again. We will proceed as a nation to the fulfillment of our destiny, to the fulfillment of the statement that this nation is the most important occurrence of the second 1,000 years. These are the thoughts I wanted to share with you today, and I thank you for letting me come back to Alaska.
The keynote address that Ted Kennedy gave at Harrigan Centennial Hall in 1968 still resonates today, thanks in large part to its availability now at the State Library's digital archives. In Sitka, I'm Bonnie Sue Hitchcock.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Homer, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Bonnie Sue Hitchcock in Sitka. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Coffett is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.